Hey there, creative people. What's up, buds? Welcome to the Creative People Podcast. My name is Ryan Leacock. This is the podcast for those of us who just want to make something cool. Today, I'm chatting with documentary filmmaker and comedian Jackson Rowe. Jackson and his creative partners just finished a documentary series called For Heaven's Sake. You can watch it right now on CBC Gem. And if you're of the American persuasion, CBC All Access or Paramount Plus, I'm not sure what's going on there. Jackson is also a sketch slash improv comedian, so you know I had to nerd out with him a bit about that. Jackson was wonderful to chat with, and he has a really interesting story about his road to, you know, having his own docuseries and getting paid for it. That's the dream, right? Or a dream. He also had some really good things to say about finding a guide for his life and for his creativity. It's a really good one, guys. Before we get to that, I just want to acknowledge something. In this episode, there is like this little rustling that happens once in a while. Josh got rid of most of it the best he could, but it's annoying once or twice. And it's all my fault because I was too nervous to ask Jackson to stop playing with something on the table. My man didn't know it was getting picked up by the mic and I should have said something. In fact, over the last couple of weeks, I've made a couple errors and I'm so embarrassed about them. So I just thought, you know what? Just own them. I'm just going to call them out. Last week, I called Raj, a creative director, instead of a design director. That's a different job. And a couple of weeks ago, I actually called Anna a couple of times. That's just rude and disrespectful. I'm sorry about that, guys. Well, that's enough of my bumper talk. Enough of this nonsense. Let's get into it with Jackson Rowe. Jackson, how's it going?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm all right. Nice to meet you.
Thanks.
Well, I'll say this. I'm glad you're clothed because I went to your trophy husband's website and I think it was the first time I was kind of visually introduced to someone and they were like nude. So it was a good introduction for you.
A shocking introduction. That's hilarious. That's very funny.
So how about we just jump into it? I'll have you introduce yourself and you can tell everyone what you do.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jackson Rowe. I'm a comedian, filmmaker, producer, documentarian. I have a show out right now called For Heaven's Sake. It's 8 episodes of a true crime / comedy series available on CBC Gem for free. All 8 episodes you can stream right now.
Nice. So all 8 episodes came out on the 4th, correct?
Correct. Yes. Bingeable. That's the idea.
How's it feel to have it out in the world?
It's a little surreal, I think. It's been a 2.5-year journey for Mike and myself, who's the other co-creator. So it's fantastic. It's surreal. It's stressful. It's all of the above, really.
Yeah.
It's just a new experience.
How long have you been performing and creating stuff with the trio?
We all met in 2013 at Second City.
Yeah.
And started making videos pretty soon after that.
Yeah.
And John Rendy is the third member of Trophy Husbands, is our sketch troupe, Mike, John, and myself. Mm-hmm. He's born in America. He was up here on a visa taking classes and stuff. So he had to move back to the States. And so Mike and I, you know, continued making videos. John, you know, when he could be a part of it, he would be.
Yeah.
And around 2017, 2018, we started to move into longer form stuff and started pitching some shows. And this is the first one that took off for us. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah. So let's go back a little bit. Comedy, creativity. When did you kind of discover those two things? Was it early in life? You know, when did you come to it?
Yeah. I'm lucky in that sense that my dad was an actor. And so it was always, I was around it for a long time.
Yeah.
And it always, you know, seemed like a feasible career, even though he would warn me, like, you know, it's not easy to make money. It's not easy for this to be your number one breadwinning path in life. But I think it always seemed like an option to me. And I know that's not the case for some creative people. So I feel very lucky in that sense. And it was more about just sort of eliminating other possibilities. Because I always knew I felt funny. I felt like this was I had fun performing. I loved to do it. But it was more about like just going through school and seeing more and more things that I didn't necessarily thrive in. And to the point where I was like, all right, well, I'm kind of left with very few options here. So I might as well give this thing a fair shot. And yeah, around 2012, I really sort of sunk my teeth into it and committed and said, this is what I want to do. And so it's been, you know, nothing but well, not nothing but it's been great since then. It's once I committed to it, it's been wonderful.
Yeah. So growing up, you looked up to your dad, obviously, who's an actor. Were there other comedians that kind of were like, oh, like, that's funny?
There's lots, yeah. The one that I think has become very corny now is, I think sixth or seventh grade, I saw Dane Cook.
Yeah.
And I had never seen somebody with so much energy and, like, you know, swearing and being sort of naughty and just, like, but so funny all at once. And it opened my eyes to, like, oh, this isn't just, you know, it's not just Jerry Seinfeld. It's not just guys in a suit and tie telling jokes. The idea that, you know, you can be edgier and you can be still be funny and still be respected. And then later in life, it was people like Dave Chappelle and Louis C.K. and Bill Burr who, you know, were sort of masters of it and were just inspiring in that way, too. But I think, I don't know if a lot of comedians have similar origin stories, but I think that it's at some point you sort of see someone do it and you realize, oh, I could do that. And it's sort of, it's a feasible lifestyle. So,
yeah. And it's interesting that you bring up Dane Cook, because when you're like younger, the first person that kind of changes how you look at it is like significant, you know, you're like, oh, I didn't know it could be like that.
Totally.
And that's really exciting.
It is. It's really an eye-opening moment that I still remember. So
yeah.
Obviously it had an effect on me.
Yeah. So I like what you said there. You're like, I felt funny. And then you went through the process of elimination. You were just left with that. I love that.
Yeah. It was never like I said, my dad was always pretty pragmatic about it. He was like, I'm never going to tell you not to do it because it's what I did. But there's struggles along the way. A lot of people it doesn't work out. So as long as you're, you know, prepared for that to happen, then we'll support you no matter what. And
yeah,
that was great to have that backing from your family. But, you know, he's right. A lot of people don't make it. A lot of people, they struggle to pay the bills as an actor. So it does take if you're going to do it, you really should commit full force. It's not something you can just dip your toe into.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to be kind of comfortable with the fact that you might not make it, I think. Right. Like,
yeah. Cause you're going to hear no a lot, no matter what.
Yeah.
Even if you're great at what you do, you're not going to get every audition. People aren't going to love all your ideas. So it's a lot of rejection no matter what, even for the best of people. So you do have to be comfortable with that.
Yeah. So talk to me about the jump to Second City.
Yeah, that was, again, right around that time when I decided to take it seriously.
Yeah.
I knew that I needed people to surround myself with people who felt the same way.
Yeah.
I knew that was going to be important to me, because it's one thing to, you know, be the funny guy in your group of friends or whatever. But it's the old adage, just like, you never want to be the smartest guy in the room. You never want to be the funniest guy in the room either. You always want people that are going to, you know, you can look up to or that are going to push you. And so even in the very early classes at Second City, I found people like that. I found Mike and I found John, that were guys that could make me laugh, and just, it seemed effortless too. And so just taking improv classes and sort of, you know, sucking at it, to be honest,
yeah,
but being in a comfortable environment where, you know, you could fail and it wouldn't bruise your ego too much. And yeah, be surrounded by people that were trying to do the same thing and were serious about it was a big deal.
Yeah. It's hard to find people who are serious about it if you're not in the right location.
Yes, absolutely. Second City, I think it's not that for everybody, but it was definitely that for me.
Yeah. You said that's when you decided to go for it. And I think that's part of the maturity of like realizing it's scary. If you've always been like the funny guy in the group, to suddenly go into a place where you're not the only one, like, that takes, like, now it's real. You know what I mean? Like, you're not just like doing it for attention necessarily.
Totally. It is. It can either be like a big, you have that moment before you go in, or you have it after your first class, for sure.
Yeah.
Because sooner or later, the reality hits you of like, oh, I'm really, you go from being a big fish in a small pond to a small fish in a big pond pretty quick.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, finding partners. And you mentioned like, these guys, they made you laugh. What's the other ingredients that you look for in a collaborator?
Commitment, I think, is, you know, matching your level of commitment and your level of work ethic. You never want to have a weak link that's dragging things down. You want people that, you know, speak the same language and are willing to put the same amount of work in, and people that you're willing to compromise with, because you don't want, you know, sort of yes men or lackeys around, but you boss around. You want people that are, you know, contributing, and you might not always see eye to eye, but you trust them enough that you're willing to sacrifice some of your stuff for their stuff, because it is, if you're forming a troop or you're collaborating, it is always going to be a team effort. So just find people that you're comfortable, you know, not being subservient to, but like, you know, sometimes taking a back seat to.
Yeah. And like allowing them to play with your ideas and possibly make them better, and like being able to let them go. Like, I would imagine that's part of it too.
100%. Yeah. It's not, don't be too precious about your own material. Don't feel like, you know, this is how it has to be. It's like, you're collaborating for a reason. So let everyone have their voice heard and still stand up for what you think is best and the choices that, you know, are going to make whatever you're making the funniest. That should always come first. But yeah, you have to, you know, admit when you're wrong, admit when someone else's idea is better.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about inspiration. How do you view inspiration, especially come from that comedy background?
It's a hard thing to nail down, I guess. I always get inspired when I see people's work that I respect and stuff. Like when I watch, back when you could watch improv shows, seeing people that, you know, improved over time and were committed to sort of the grind of going out every night and stuff. I get inspired by other people and their commitment to it. But it is, it's sort of ethereal. It's hard to nail down exactly what gives you inspiration, but just always be watching things is my strategy. Always be consuming stuff. Never hold your ego above, you know, this person hasn't been at it as long as I have, you know, that doesn't matter. It's like the funniest joke always wins.
Yeah.
So just have an open mind to things is my strategy to sort of stay inspired. Cause if you're waiting for it to hit you, you might be waiting a long time. It's sort of,
yeah,
it's better to do your best to sort of stay consistently inspired.
Yeah. I like that in comedy, you have that rule that you can lean back on of the funniest thing wins. Sometimes when you're collaborating in other things, it's hard to know necessarily, well, like if it's not funny and it's supposed to be dramatic, or like, what's the best idea then? Right. But if something makes everyone laugh the hardest, there's no arguing with that.
There's no arguing. Yeah. Which is great. There is a simplicity to that where you don't have to argue too much. The proof is in the pudding. You know,
yeah.
When people laugh, that's what you're here to do. If you're here to make a statement and you're here to, you know, put boundaries, that's one thing. But if you're doing that at the sacrifice of comedy, then you're in the wrong business. Like, we're here for comedy.
Yeah. So one of the things I noticed, like, I just watched the trailer before we talked for Heaven's Sake. I'm loving it. Cool. And there's like some funny moments, but it plays it pretty straight. Talk to me about that a little.
Yeah. Well, that was the idea, really, is it's a true crime. Like, this is a case that it really happened. There's real people involved. And the only thing comedic about it is that the investigators, Mike and myself, are comedians by trade.
Okay.
So it's the opposite of what we just talked about, where the joke doesn't win. The mystery always wins. The truth always wins. It's sprinkling in the funny, in the natural moments, the slice of life moments, the you know, the things that are naturally funny, highlighting that and not shying away. We're lucky that Mike's family is the family that the main person, Harold Heaven is his name. He disappeared in 1934, and it's from Mike's family. So we had access to them, and we would have never sort of taken this on if they didn't already strike a tone of, you know, levity around it themselves.
Yeah.
You see throughout the series is that as it got passed down through the generations, the gravity, you know, loosened a little bit.
And
by the time it's at Mike's generation, this is just a story they tell around the campfire to scare each other. And Harold himself is a shadow of the real man he once was. And that was really interesting for us to dive, because we're not documentarians. We're definitely not investigators by any, you know, stretch of the imagination. So
yeah,
it was very much mystery first, truth first. Let's try and solve this case as best we can. Mm-hmm. And when there are moments that we can have fun, we'll have fun. But it's never going to be the goal.
I love that, because it's a perfect kind of fish out of water, which always makes for, you know, good comedy. And then also, you know, life's funny, right?
Precisely. Yeah. It's, you don't have to force it most of the time.
Yeah.
It's like, especially the people. We shot in Minden, Ontario, and that town is just like full of characters. And it's, you don't have to fake it. You don't have to push anybody to be funny. They just naturally are. So
yeah,
and that's always better. It just, as long as it feels genuine, then I'm happy. Because
yeah,
the last thing I want it to do is feel forced.
Yeah. So how did this, walk me through, how did this idea come up? Like, it does seem a little left field.
Totally. Yeah. It was, we started to develop it in 2018. And that was like really in the heat of the true crime boom, I would say. It's like Making a Murderer, all those things had just come out and everyone was obsessed. I was obsessed too. And so Mike sort of came home from Thanksgiving one, we were roommates, and he came home from Thanksgiving and he had the police reports from Harold's case from 1934. And so that was shocking. I was like, I didn't even know that records were kept like that. It was really like I was holding a piece of history. And we read through it and it felt like I was reading through, you know, a true crime. Like it checked a lot of the boxes. And so, you know, we came to that decision that maybe we could make something out of this, but it was going to take the right people to partner with, because it is such a specific tone to strike of like, yeah, it's a tragedy that we're going to, you know, treat with a sense of humor. Yeah. So we just happened to team up with the right people. We had a meeting at Muse Entertainment here in Toronto, which is a really good unscripted production company. And they, you know, helped us film a sizzle reel for it. And then we took it to CBC and they said yes pretty much right away, which was amazing to us. But at that point, it was still just Mike and myself and the team at Muse trying to figure out what the hell it was going to be, because we really didn't have as much as clear a goal at that point. We were just trying to figure out how to make it a show. And then Mike and myself, we had a relationship at Funny or Die. So they posted a bunch of our sketches years ago. And so because of the show American Vandal, which was so popular at the time too, which was a straight mockumentary of a true crime, we knew that they understood the tone, or at least how to, you know, approach the tone. And once they were on board, they said that, you know, we should bring the American Vandal guys on board for this. Like, that would be perfect. And of course, we thought it would be perfect too, but we never thought they would actually do it. Luckily, we pitched them and they were into it. So the creators are EPs on this show. And once that happened, we really felt like we had a chance to make it. Took it around in LA, did two rounds of pitches, and CBS was the one that said yes to us. And then we spent all of the rest of 2019 and just sort of scrambling to develop it and get it ready to shoot.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
And when did you, and so you shot it in 2019?
We shot it, started the very beginning of 2020.
Oh, okay. Like right before all the craziness.
Yeah, we shot January, February, a little bit of March, and then had to stop.
Wow.
Until we came back in August and finished it. Yeah.
So like between like shopping this show to all the places and then 2020 and filming it, like your life's taken like that sounds like a lot.
Dude, yeah, it's a lot. It's like I went from waiting tables to multiple LA meetings and, you know, being the co-creator, star, executive producer of my own show very quickly. It was pretty bizarre. It is bizarre. Still feels surreal. And then, you know, to have all that momentum and then for COVID to shut it down, that was a tough pill to swallow for all of us, but we got to finish it. So I do feel lucky in that sense, you know, especially I had a job in COVID where a lot of creative people didn't. So
yeah,
certainly not complaining about that, but it's been a roller coaster ride. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you marry the two? Like your brain's probably just trying to catch up a lot of the time. Like what are we doing now?
It's true. Yeah. We get a lot of questions now of what's next. Like, what do you guys want to do now? And I have a million things I'd like to say, but the answer is like, we're going to see, because this just came out. We just wrapped episode 8 less than a month ago. So we're gonna see what doors this opens and then we'll decide. But you're right. I do feel like my brain's playing catch up a little bit.
So you have a Kitchener connection. I'm from Kitchener. I understand you went to Wilfrid Laurier.
I did, yes.
How long did you live in Kitchener?
I was only there for a year and a half.
Yeah.
I decided to study English out of high school.
Yeah.
And I got into a few places, but Laurier was the one that was sort of the farthest from home. So that won out for me. Yeah.
I love it. Do you have anything that comes to mind when you think of Kitchener?
Oh, very fond memories. I've met some of my very closest friends still at Laurier. It was just not for me, in the sense that I only went to university because everyone was doing it. And, you know, it was, again, like we talked about before, I had some things to knock off the list of possible careers. So
yeah,
I did that fairly quickly in my first year. But it was like, the experience was wonderful.
Yeah.
The city was excellent. It was great to be away from home and like in a place where I could explore and feel like my own man a little bit. So I recommend it to anybody.
Yeah. Well, I love that. So let's talk about ambition and success and kind of balancing those things with who you are and staying true to who you're trying to be. Do you have any insights on that, or you're kind of right in the middle?
I definitely don't have, you know, layers of wisdom to impart by any means, but I know that for myself, I just knew that I was going to do whatever it took to make it. And if it took 1 year, if it took 10 years, I was okay with that. Mm. So I think it goes to what we said before about being okay with failure, being okay with hearing no a bunch, and just staying, you know, believing in yourself, because it only takes, you know, one thing to get the snowball rolling to where you're going to get opportunities. And if you keep your nose at it, at the grindstone, then that's the best way for that stuff to happen. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely no magic formula. There's no, you know, checklist you're going to have to make. It's just believe in yourself and have goals, meet those goals, be persistent, be creative, you know, take chances. Mm-hmm. It's, as far as ambition, it's something you need, I think, to make it. You know, no one gets into this business thinking like, I can't wait to be a third guest star on Murdoch Mysteries. You know, you want to be the star, right? So
yeah,
believe in yourself and do not get discouraged. You just can't get easily discouraged, because you're going to hear no, but it's not forever.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that a lot. So walk me through, you're at Second City and you're meeting these guys, and it's funny. So Second City, how did you move from like stage stuff to filming sketches and all that? Talk to me about that kind of period.
Sure. Yeah. I was filming sketches already with a friend of mine from high school, and they were very rudimentary. Like, we didn't know what we were doing. We just had a camera and we're having fun with it. And so when I met Mike and John, Mike was in film school at the time. Mm-hmm. We actually had an idea of, you know, style and things you should and shouldn't do when you're filming. And John, the other trophy husband, is just a massive film buff. So he had, you know, his own opinions on stuff. So it was just lucky meeting people that were at different stages in their life that could sort of usher me along in certain, you know, areas of things. That led to, you know, me learning more about shooting and filming and being able to lend some more expertise to in certain subjects, certain areas. And we just really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And once they started to come out and people started to like them, it was just like, it's addicting. You just want to keep making more and you want to, you know, see how far this can take you. And Funny or Die was one of the big milestones for us. It was the first time they featured one of our videos on the front page. It was like an unbelievable moment for us, where for those of you who don't know, Funny or Die like 5 years ago was like the coolest thing ever. Mm-hmm. It's not so much anymore, but being on the front page of that, it's like there's just little milestones we hit that kept us motivated.
Yeah.
And yeah.
What's a takeaway? Like, what's the difference between like being on the stage and like filming that sketch comedy? Like,
yeah, it's a lot different. Filming is like, there's the obvious differences where, you know, if you mess up, you can take it again.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can pick perfect setting and stuff. You have a lot more choice. But what I love about on stage is that it's just, it's there, it's live, it's in the moment. You hear the audience react. You know if you're doing a good job. It's like we said before, the best joke wins.
Yeah.
That happens because people are laughing. And when you can hear people respond immediately, it's like, it's really wonderful. And it really just makes you feel validated, in the sense that some videos never can, because, you know, you can get a YouTube comments and you can get thumbs up and stuff, but to actually hear people laughing and people, you know, enjoying it in the moment is a totally different experience. And yeah, it's like, you know, the way the industry is everything is on film, and that's like, that's where the money is, I guess. But the real joy still comes from on stage. I think that's the best.
Yeah. And I think it's a great place for like for you to come up, because if something is not funny, you get to get that reaction immediately. Like,
sure, yeah.
If you do a video and you think it's funny and then you put it up, like that, you've done all this work, but like just for things to die instantly teaches you right in that moment. I think that's an interesting place to like learn, you know, learn the ropes.
Yeah. I would much rather that than even than indifference. Like there's nothing worse than releasing a video and it's just like tepid response of like, oh my gosh, I wish I could have at least made you hate it. Like at least then you would have felt something. But
yeah.
So you're right. Having that, you learn pretty quick on stage when it doesn't, something flops that you're like, all right, this either needs to be reworked. Like it doesn't, it's not a guarantee that it sucks, but it needs work at least.
Yeah. So let's talk about funny. And so with these sketches, when you had an idea, talk about kind of like how it goes from a base idea to kind of becoming a full fleshed out thing.
For us, it was usually riffing and improvising with the idea before we took the camera out, sort of come with an idea, you know, a really basic idea. Maybe you have some plot points mapped out, but usually never dialogue for us anyway. Mm. Usually we sort of knew where it was going to start and where it was going to end and certain moments to hit along the way. But a lot of the dialogue, the best dialogue anyway, the one that ends up in there, was often improvised. And that was a lot of the fun for us, was, you know, not focusing too much on learning your lines or hitting a certain mark or anything like that. It was, let's get the framing right. Let's get what we need to get beforehand and then sort of let the camera run and do our best and make each other laugh. And then we'll pick the best stuff out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so many different ways to go about what you do. You know, some people can be funny alone in their room and then other people need that energy. Talk to me about different styles of comedy and kind of how you work with different people who have different, you know, ways of relating.
Yeah. I think you just find common ground. You find people's strengths that you can play with. And, you know, a lot, as long as you're not, you know, exploiting anybody or punching down on anybody, there's a million different ways to make a joke work or a style of thing work. It very much does come down to just trusting your partner and learning their strengths and weaknesses and playing ball with them and not forcing them to do what you want to do. You just find the common ground. And usually if you're both comfortable with that, it comes fairly easily.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, you know, trusting one another. And you're right. There's a lot of different styles and some people are more outgoing than others, but as long as you can, you know, just be honest with each other and trust each other, usually you'll find what's funny between the two of you that you can share.
Mm-hmm. Because so much of it is in the moment. And like, how do you feel about your creativity? Is it something that is just, you know, is it a constant thing in your life, or is it kind of just like an, you know what I'm saying? A little bit?
Yeah, I think I do. Yeah. I think it is a constant thing, but it's not always feasible. Like I can't always turn it into something.
Yeah.
It's like, that's something I know I struggle with. I think a lot of creative people do, is, you know, good ideas are a dime a dozen, but can you really turn it into something that, you know, people can enjoy?
Good.
So it is, like, creativity is something that's with me all the time. At least that's what I would call it. But yeah, it's not always something you can explain. It's not always something that you can grasp. And the best feeling is when you can take an idea from just a kernel that you had in your head, put it on paper and sort of show it to the world. And the finished product is at least close to what you came up with at the start. That's always the best.
Yeah. So if you were to picture your interactions with your creativity in your mind's eye, what would that look like?
It's like almost like trying to catch butterflies in a net, I would say.
Yeah.
Or it's like, they're there. I can see them. These ideas or these jokes, whatever. But I can't always catch them in my net. I can't always make them fully form in my mind to the point where I can use them.
Yeah.
So I can see them, you know, I know they exist, but actually capturing them and presenting them is a challenge sometimes.
Yeah. I like what you brought up about good ideas. Turning them into something that people can enjoy is like a different thing.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure everybody who thinks they're funny, who want, like, you have a good idea. You definitely have had good ideas.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between having one and sort of making one.
That's really good. Yeah.
And it's not, like I said before, there's no checklist. There is no take your idea, run it through this system, and then it'll come out the way you want it. At least not for me. Just always trying, working, sit down to write. If nothing comes out, then nothing comes out, but at least you tried. Like, put the effort in, put the time in. Mm-hmm. That's the best strategy. Again, I can't always do that. And that's the struggle too, is you have to give yourself some leeway to have bad days.
Yeah.
Have days where you're like, I really didn't do anything today.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I dwell on that, then tomorrow's going to be bad too. So let's wipe the slate clean, try again tomorrow. And just trust yourself, be okay with yourself. Some self-love, it never hurt.
Yeah. We talked earlier before about people saying no to you and being able to like withstand that. But it's also those bad days that you have to like trudge through as well.
Yeah. A lot of creative people are their own biggest critic or their own worst enemy.
Yeah.
You just, yeah. Don't dwell on the bad days because they're going to happen.
Yeah.
Don't dwell on the no's because they're going to happen. But just keep at it. That's a huge key for a lot of people, myself included.
Yeah. Talk to me about your creativity and the people around you. It sounds like your parents were really supportive.
Yeah. But I think like any teenager, whatever, like I rebelled against what they would find funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's, I think, very normal. And they were always supportive. And it was never my goal to make them laugh. I was always like, I always just took that for granted.
Yeah.
I was always like, I want to make my friends laugh. I want to make, you know, the older kids at school laugh. I used it as like, you know, a tool to make friends and stuff. But as far as creativity goes, yeah. What's so important to me is surrounding yourself with people that care and that are being creative themselves and that are trying new things. And since the pandemic hit, that's been much more difficult. Like my favorite thing in the world used to be just going to a comedy club, doing a show, and then sitting around afterwards and talking to my friends. Like that was the best. It really was. I took it for granted now. It's something I can't wait to do again. But
yeah,
it's nights like that where, you know, nothing really happens. You're just chatting, but I leave with a smile on my face, feeling just energized from being around funny people. Like that's where I feel like is a well of creativity for me.
Yeah. I like that a lot. So other than the pandemic and the things, the problems that that's causing, if you were to think about the world of comedy, are there trends that inspire you or are there trends that concern you? Can you talk to me about kind of both sides of that coin?
Yeah, not so much. I think it's all it's all cyclical. Like,
yeah,
what's certain trends, you know, like prank videos was a big trend for a while. It's like, this is not my style, but it doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people are going to laugh at what they're going to laugh at. And in 5 years, no one's going to care anymore. I think some things are constant, like, you know, all good, you know, anything that's honest, right? Feels like that's always going to stand the test of time.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas flashier stuff is like, it might be good for some views here and there, but it's not really going to resonate.
Yeah.
So, but I definitely don't have a problem with anybody in any form, whatever, you know, whatever makes them laugh, whatever they like to make, I'm all for it. Just, yeah. And I think it's wrong to tell people to like stay in their lane in that sense too, where it's like, oh, you do stand up. You're like, you shouldn't be making, you know, sketch videos, whatever it is. Like the more you can get in under your belt, the more stuff you have in your tool belt, the better. And some of it's going to suck, but I applaud anyone who's trying new stuff.
Yeah. Was there something in the last little while that you saw that you were like, whoa, that's interesting. That's inspiring to me.
I think podcasting, honestly, like the sort of evolution of podcasting from like, you know, we're just going to two guys hanging out, having a conversation to, you know, some that are much more polished and much more produced and to some that are even more bare bones, you know, where it's like, and I like all different kinds. Like I like interview podcasts. I like, let's just shoot the shit podcasts. I like, here's a story and I'm going to tell you 90 different facts about it. Like I like it all. So
yeah.
I think the evolution of the podcast medium is impressive and inspiring too.
Yeah. it's interesting, like some of the things that you said that have stood out to me along this chat. It seems like you're looking kind of for often like a North Star to kind of go for, whether it's like honesty or funny, you know. Talk to me about having that kind of guide in your life. Where do you think that comes from? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't like to think of myself as having too many boundaries. I like to be experimental and I like to take risks and chances. And that's the kind of stuff that I like to consume too. So having a very basic sort of guide, like honesty or like just what makes me laugh, regardless of if it's, you know, in good taste or if it's, you know, by the book, just like having that as the absolute top of the charts that we're always shooting for is something that, yeah, I need, because I don't like to live within too many other guidelines. Yeah. So having the big thing at the top that, you know, if you're ever questioning yourself, that look at that and see, am I still being true to that? That helps. That's just, it takes some pressure off of being like, feeling like you need to know everything all the time. I think it's just like, am I being honest? Am I being funny? Good. Okay. Then I can keep going. If not, let's think about it again. Let's try a different way.
Yeah. I like that. I like that a lot. What's your favorite thing to make?
It's sketch videos, because that not only is like where I feel the strongest and the most at home, but it's where so many of my favorite relationships have sprung from. And I think, you know, I grew up, I loved Chappelle's Show. I love Key and Peele, like sketch shows like that. Because there's a lot of bad sketch shows too, but like when it's done right, so impressive. So there is like, it's a very high form of comedy to me, I think.
Yeah.
It's like really good sketch. So that's kind of my favorite, I would say.
Yeah. I just listened to Key, that's his name, right? I'm terrible with names. He did a, he did an Audible series about the history of sketch comedy.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was, it's a little dorky, but it's also pretty informative. And it was, he did a lot of research on like kind of walking through, you know, this led to this, and this is what people thought was funny at the time. And so sometimes it's a little corny, but because of the source material that he has to go through is like, you know, like it's dated or it's like from the 40s. And so we wouldn't find it funny now, but it's still important. Right. And I think it was really nice to have something that doesn't always get its like historical, you know, praise.
Yeah, sure.
To be celebrated by him.
Good, yeah. He's a great voice. He's an amazing improviser as well, that guy. So I'll check that out. Thanks for recommending that. That's interesting.
Yeah, it was cool. It is a bit dorky though, but hey, even that was fun that he just kind of got to nerd out for 10 episodes. It was like, oh, totally. This is cool.
Yeah.
If you think about people who are not in comedy or people who might know you, but don't do what you do, what do you think that they get wrong about the life that you live with? Like, cause let's say someone heard all this stuff, you know, you're in LA, you're taking meetings. Like what's the other side of that, that you wish they kind of knew?
It's just a lot of late nights and a lot of, you know, self-doubt when you're trying to create something that's funny. There is some glamour to it. I've been lucky enough to experience that in the last couple of years, but 95% of it, 99% of it is like me and in my bedroom, or me and Mike in our living room, just like going over and over ideas and like simple things and like, you know, picking apart little things that never actually make it into a show or make it anywhere. It's just a lot of work, but I'm also not going to sit here and tell you that my life is, you know, too difficult. Like I chose, part of being a comedian is that like sometimes you get to wake up late, you know, sometimes you don't have to be anywhere at 9 a.m, you know, and you know, I get to perform at night and like have a beer with my friends, you know, on a weekday. There's a lot of perks to it too.
Yeah.
But some of the stuff you might not think about is just like, yeah, pages and pages of notes and writing and sort of questioning yourself and a lot of mental games that go along with it too.
Yeah. Do you have a mental game that like helps you get through some of that? You
can No. I wish I did. I wish I did. Yeah.
You're just making it up as you go along. I love it.
It is what it is, man. Every time's a little bit different, I think.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Jackson, I think we're good, man. I had a great time chatting with you. I can't wait to watch all through them. Congrats on the show. I'm excited to see what you have next.
Awesome. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
All right. You take care. All right.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Jackson's great, isn't he? Man, I love what he had to say about the funniest joke winning and finding people who speak the same language as you. That's so important. Oh, and that thing about the difference between a good idea and making a good idea, and that's like the whole reason I want to do this show. We are the people who show up and we make the good ideas. Jackson, thank you for being on the pod. Thank you for your cool docuseries, for sharing your journey with us, and for, you know, putting this question in my head. Am I being honest? Am I being funny? I love that as a guidepost for life. Alternative titles for this episode could be swearing and being sort of naughty, trying to catch butterflies, and that's very funny. This week's episode was produced by me, Ryan Leacock. Music was written by Joby. Big thanks to Josh and Mixed Media Sound for cleaning up these sounds, best he could anyway. Special thanks to Aaron from Him and Her. Thank you to you for listening. If you heard something you like, tell a friend, share it, buy something on the Etsy. Actually, this week I sold 15 sets of imposter syndrome survivor pins on the site. I love it. Someone knows a lot of former imposters. Have a good week, guys. Show up. We're making the new. See ya.